Let's talk about it.
Hello and welcome back to Thick Radio, the podcast where we talk about gaining, fetism, and everything in their orbit. I'm James.
And I'm Tim, so let's get into it. Today we're continuing our series of dinner table talks. We have a few guests with us, and I'm going to let them introduce themselves one by one.
Hello, my name is Richie. You can find me on Grammar and Instagram as Mon Appetit. And I was in the Vigorous versus Casual Gaining episode, so this isn't my first rodeo.
Hi, I'm Paul. You can find me on most social media as Zaftig Spice. And I was on episode Non-Gainer Chub.
Well, heidi ho there. I'm Josh. And this is my first episode on Thick Radio. You could find me on Grammar as Why Hello Harry, and also on Instagram as hungry.hungryhimbo.
Gorgeous. Well, listen, welcome everyone. Thank you so much for being here today. It was a lovely day today. And you know what? I think it is such a lovely day that I am just overcome with a sense of the spirit and a sense of, oh, I just feel a need to talk to some beautiful fats about, I don't know where I was going with this. We're talking about religion today, people. I usually have like a pithy way into this shit. No, not today. No, we don't have it.
You didn't have some bullshit to say to warm us up and get us into the episode.
Not necessarily. But that's okay, because I think genuinely this is a very interesting topic to talk on. You know, this is one of those ones where we've talked to people about this before, you know, but because the concept of being religious, being spiritual is such an uniquely personable thing, and there are so many different identities out there, so many streams of faith and ways of practicing different streams of faith, that actually it makes sense to talk to a couple of different people about how one might approach their faith, especially through a lens of obesity. Right now, we cover this in our solo episode before. There's narratives about the sin of gluttony and sloth when it comes to Catholicism. There's ideas about how certain African tribal religions also approach the concept of obesity as a very positive thing with certain spirits, right? So around the world, there are these different interpretations. And while we're not going to get the chance to talk about absolutely everything, I think taking the opportunity to speak with some people of size, people who are gainers, people who have different identities, and just work out how we come to terms with who we are as variations of plus size people when it comes to faith, I think is something that is really worth talking about, because we don't get to have this conversation. Putting it out there to our guests, just as a first off, do you often have the opportunity to talk about faith with many people in queer spaces?
Well, I actually go to a predominantly LGBT church, so I do get to talk about faith and queerness in conjunction quite regularly, but not the obesity rarely comes up as part of the conversation.
As for me, I go to a very progressive Catholic church where we have many LGBT people. We have quite a few same-sex couples there that are married. We have quite a few trans and non-binary people that are there. And we even, a few years ago, we actually had a LGBTQ task force in response to the Vatican's upholding of preventing same-sex marriage in the Catholic Church. So we do talk about our sexuality and how that relates to who we are as Catholics, but similar obesity and health and all that rarely, if ever, has been mentioned or even talked about. So, yeah.
I may come from a very different background, I guess, than most, because I grew up in the Pentecostal church. And though I don't follow those practices anymore, I had taken a few years at the very least to say that I was exploring the intersectionality of my LGBTQ community that I had just recently found when I came out around 6 years ago, almost 7 years ago now. And when I decided that perhaps like attending a congregation for me wasn't what I needed anymore, but at the same time still hanging on to parts of my faith just personally, I think from the lens of Pentecostalism just looks very different, that it can often reflect it often reflects our typical social, our American social view of like health and fitness and all that that has started over the past few decades. They don't necessarily like bring it up all the time. Like many of our other things are like, we don't really talk about this often, but I do remember distinctly, like within even my later teen years. So recently, well, not recently, I guess I'm 30, but, but like in my recent like church going years, that was still being talked about as like something that people struggle with, quote unquote, alongside homosexuality and alongside many other things that the Pentecostal church does view as sin.
I don't usually get an opportunity to talk about religion with people because I tend to make them nervous. So when you reveal that you are a witch or a neo-pagan, most people immediately think that you're a devil worshiper and that they need to stay as far away from you as possible. So I don't get to have discussions on religion with people, but boy, do they love to get into arguments with me about it.
I mean, to be clear, like, Matt's a Satanist, right?
Yeah, Matt's a Satanist, which I still haven't told my mother about. my mother is a very devout Catholic. Now, she's not staunch, because she's not like she doesn't agree with everything that the Catholic Church says, but she's a traditionalist, so like that's what she was raised with, that's what she's comfortable with. But she has a lot of disagreements with the Pope, with the entire institution as it stands on certain issues. So like she's a very progressive Catholic, but I think if I told her, well, by the way, Matt's a Satanist, she'd be like, I'm sorry, what?
Goodness me. So I come from a family that was very Anglican, Church of England, growing up. But, you know, after a certain time, that wasn't really part of the conversation. And then in my teen years, I did the whole born again Christian thing. I even went to Bible college, which I think I've mentioned before on the podcast. Oh, Josh, you too?
Oh, yeah. Like we're just, you know, Bible college sisters. Look at us.
talking shit about people in their shitty fucking clog-ass shoes and the fucking... That was me, at least, being like, I understand we're at Bible college, but why did she wear Crocs today? This doesn't feel like what Jesus died on the cross for. You know what I mean?
Well, then she should have been wearing Birkenstocks.
Well, I think she's dead now, so, you know, that's... Oh, how the turntables.
Oh, I was just gonna say that's what we called Birkenstocks. Like, we either called them the ugly sandals that lesbians wear, or we called them Jesus sandals.
Oh my goodness. So despite my Bible college training and despite my Pentecostal background, these days I identify as agnostic, which is a progression from the formerly agnostic that I identified with. And for anyone who's unfamiliar with those terms, I'll quickly define. Agnostic is the belief in a something. You don't necessarily know what it is. It's not necessarily ascribed to a particular faith. You just know that there's a sort of some happening out there in the cosmos. Agnostic takes that a bit of a step further, where you go, whether or not there is something, I choose to live my life as separate to that. Kind of like an estranged father. You sort of look at him on the thing and you shake his hand and go, thanks for being a sperm donor, but everything that I am, everything that I have is self-made. And that's my current approach to faith and how I want to have this conversation today. And I appreciate each of you sharing that little taste of your faith and that background and how those situations are informed. I mean, if I can ask here for y'all, for the faith that you ascribe to, what is that typical narrative about obesity and where you are either in your body or in your journey of transformation or attraction? How does that stance on obesity sit with you?
So I grew up evangelical, which is sort of Pentecostal adjacent. And so there's a difference kind of between like the actual theology and the cultural version of what is practiced, whereas when you actually dig into the Bible, gluttony is about taking more than your share. It's not about enjoying life. In fact, Jesus said, I have come that they may live abundantly. But, you know, in practice, of course, the church is not great at following the Bible. And so I remember, like, I grew up 80s and 90s. One of the most popular, you know, Christian singers was this soprano named Sandy Patty, who was a larger woman. And I remember, like, she went on Jenny Craig and there was a commercial campaign and everything. I don't think it did a whole lot for her, but, like, even she, as, like, one of the biggest selling, most popular pop culture Christians, couldn't escape the idea that there was something wrong with her for her size. I remember there's also a Christian comedian named Mark Lowry who would make jokes about eating and being fat, but then also make fun of, like, traveling preachers who would, you know, talk about the sin of long hair, but then be the first one at the buffet and eat too much. So, like, the cultural lived out version was very much like, you know, don't be a pig, don't be a slob, don't, you know, despite the fact that we have potlucks and bake sales and all of that. So, like, food is part of Christian culture. You know, going back to, like, the Last Supper, like, we literally eat as part of a church service, but don't take too much.
Well, in fairness, those wafers aren't very tasty anyway, so.
It's like, I have questions, because, like, then what of that in Catholicism and transubstantiation? Like, the literal belief of, like, the little wafer is the body of Christ, and, like, the wine is the blood of Christ kind of thing.
I will say, to the wafer part, it's supposed to be simple unleavened bread, because you got to do it, you got to get it done in a hurry, and it keeps them nuns employed, okay? Because there's, like, I don't know if y'all seen that video of, like, the Irish Catholic nuns make it, they have, like, this whole operation, like, they got the press, they got the batter, they be making toast left and right, that, like, that is their ministry. But for me, to Paul's point, food is, like, essential to Christianity. Again, like, the Last Supper, like, that is, with the loaves and the fish, like, how God provides, even in scarcity, or with Judaism, that, you know, they escape to the land of milk and honey. What's milk and honey? Food. So, the land of plenty, or it was manna that rained down from heaven during Exodus, all that. So food is essential to, I'm sure there's in Islam as well, but I can't speak for that because I don't know, that's not part of the Christian scripture. But at least in the two Abrahamic religions, food is pivotal, but not too much food. They, like, to the loaves and fish pair, to the loaves and fish scripture, they took the leftovers. They didn't eat all of it. They just ate what they need and then took the rest for later. In my experience, though, growing up, there really wasn't a lot of, like, meals after Mass, at least, like, in my elementary grade years. But, like, once I got to high school, the church, the chapel there after Sundays, there would usually always be donuts and there'd be, like, open coffee, all that, so because they wanted that fellowship. And honestly, for them, it was, please take it, please take all this, because it'll just get thrown away, and or we don't want this because, like, there's too much of it. Like, there's a lot of you, there's a lot of food, problem solving using logic means no food left over. I was all for it. I was just like, free food, heck yeah, I'll take it. I'm like, I would commit gluttony right now. I'll just go to church again next Sunday and be good to go. But it's, for me, it's about that community aspect is where food comes in. So
it's interesting, as a bit of a common thread here about, and not to deviate so specifically away from the food conversation, but, you know, as far as food and obesity and wellness and health and exercise and all these kind of tropes are concerned, you know, there is this very common thread of kind of pick and choosing. There is absolutely a sense of, you know, Jesus was humbled. Jesus was humble. We need to be more Christ-like. You know, we don't want to take too much. We don't want to do all this. We only want to take enough. But then, of course, after the service is done and then everybody's brought a casserole, all of a sudden is, well, you know, God told us to, you know, abound in his pleasures and all, well, you shall have plenty. Oh, we are a blessed congregation today, aren't we? Oh, God. And just memories of praise and worship, you know, 30 minutes of fucking Pentecostal happy clappies. And then the pastor coming up and going, oh, you don't need exercise with praise and worship every Sunday. Oh, God, it's all coming back to me, girl. Oh, gosh. Memories. But it is interesting that there is this very human element. And we do this also in our day-to-day lives. We have this, maybe a slight justification where it's like we have this idea of what we want to be doing. Oh, well, maybe we'll do a little bit of this. And, you know, there's some rhetoric we'll use to go this way. Oh, well, we'll come back this way a little bit. And, you know, I think it's almost good to acknowledge in a way that that's a very human element, you know, that it's not necessarily just, oh, a religious hypocrisy. It's like, no, this is a very human element where if a bitch is hungry, like, girl, you know, the Lord said eat somewhere in the Bible. Say that somewhere. And there's me hoeing down into whatever somebody brought to service, you know? So I think it can be very that. I'm curious to ask you, Tim, like, because yours with the paganism and, you know, I imagine you've got some understanding maybe of, because of Matt, with Satanism, maybe some understanding of Wicca to an extent. Do you know if there is, like, specific iconography or rhetoric or just anything faith-driven around the concepts of, like, food, fat, and obesity?
Well, I can tell you that both Wicca and neo-paganism, as the umbrella term, doesn't give a shit about obesity. That's not something that matters. You know, like, that's not a defining trait in anyone's life. So there's nothing in any of any of those tenets that says that being overweight or being gluttonous is a bad thing. In fact, it would be more encouraged than anything else. Like, you're supposed to enjoy life. You're supposed to enjoy your time on this earth. You're not supposed to be obsessing about the afterlife, because then you don't enjoy the life you have, and you ignore problems in this life because you're like, oh, well, it doesn't matter. I'll be dead anyway, and it won't be my problem. No, like, we were given this planet by either a creator or through evolution, whichever theory you believe in, but we are supposed to be the custodians of it. We're not supposed to just say, oh, it doesn't matter because the whole world's going to be blown up anyway, and we're all going to, you know, the second coming is going to happen and all that. Like, that's what's led to a lot of environment problems to begin with. So in paganism, you would definitely be encouraged to enjoy your life, have fun, eat the food you want to eat. I mean, obviously don't do something stupid, you know, like, or don't be too careless. Like, if you're eating foods and living a lifestyle that's going to lead to an early death, they'd probably say, hey, you know, you might want to dial it back if you want to live a little bit longer. But all of the holidays, you're encouraged to feast because they're celebrations. And that's the whole point. Like, you know, Samhain is the end of harvest. So how do you celebrate the end of harvest? You feast. The solstice is the midwinter celebration. So what are you supposed to do? You're supposed to feast, because these things tide you over through the year. You know, when you think about Bronze Age man, they had to track everything by the turn of the season, you know? And so, like, these feasting days, these festivals were meant to tide people over.
There probably is an element of that which is worth looking at. The idea that Neolithic humans probably couldn't eat very much, ironically, a very Christ-like thing. Throughout most of the year, because they didn't have food preservation at that point in time. They probably didn't even have, like, agriculture, right?
Yeah, I think in the Neolithic period, we hadn't discovered agriculture yet.
But, like, you're absolutely right. There are these notions of feasting that come at these high points where it's probably a case of, like, well, we've got all this food, we need to put it to good use, it won't last any longer. Or maybe in those cases of deep winter, we need to feast to literally fatten ourselves up to survive the cold, elements like that. I mean, there is some scientific notion about, like, this is why mammals have fat, period. Because in order for us to survive the Ice Age, we had to literally fatten up and get all fluffy to survive the cold. So there probably is some, like, evolutionary aspect of this going a little bit beyond all that point. But to bring it back a little bit to faith, there is an interesting concept that I don't know how many people here are familiar with, but this is a book I reference a lot. And if you haven't read it, I would love to encourage everyone to find a copy and buy it. It's called Fearing the Black Body by Sabrina Strings. It is a fantastic read. She's a professor at a university somewhere out west in America, and she essentially breaks down the progression of, like, from the time of Botticelli all the way up to the modern day, this progression of fat phobia and its intrinsic link to racism. And there's actually a very interesting through line wherein you see, especially with the freeing of slaves and with the prevalence of black bodies in spaces where traditionally there were only white bodies, people looking at it and going, oh, they're quite shapely. They're shaped very different to our typical up and down bodies. And so with the introduction of, like, sugar from South America and people having greater access for the first time to excess food, which led to a lot of weight gain at that time in history, there was this push religiously to say, okay, now we need to start being more chaste. Now we need to start fasting a little bit more. And this can be seen in a lot of historical documentation. So there is quite a through line about wanting to kind of pair theological moralism with some really not great ideas of how we maybe view other people. And what I want to ask all of you all is, do you feel like you observe that happening within these types of spaces, or do we maybe live in a time where the approach to faith and these aspects are maybe a little bit beyond that?
I think it depends on what religion you currently ascribe to, honestly. Like, in my case, like I said, it doesn't really matter. But, like, I'm sure that Catholicism is, I mean, you know, Richie, maybe you can chime in with what you know, that I'm sure Catholicism is still pushing the seven deadly sins idea, you know, and gluttony is one of them. So
to that, I mean, honestly, the last mention I've ever heard of the seven deadly sins in any context outside of this is the anime. But in all seriousness, no, like, I don't really hear much about the seven deadly sins. And if I do, gluttony, honestly, isn't really one of them. It feels like it's kind of been demoted. Honest, a lot of, like, if there is talk, it's pride. It's avarice. It's the stuff, it's anger, wrath. So more of, like, the, at least in my church, it's more about, okay, how can we avert those so that way we can be a peacemaking and justice making community. But honestly, I haven't really heard anything from, like, Vatican or higher ups about, like, gluttony in that sense. So, and I guess obesity in general. So I guess the seven deadly sins aren't as talked about, at least in my experience.
If we're talking about gluttony in general, I don't hear it talked about that much. And I also think, because I am in a more progressive denomination, I work for a mainline denomination that is fairly progressive, and I attend a different progressive denomination. I feel like sin is often being reframed in terms of how does it harm your neighbor, as opposed to sort of that old school idea of, you know, well, this is the list, so deal with it. So I am curious what is happening in evangelical culture, because I do know there's, like, Christian diet books and diet centers. There was a documentary recently about one of the women who ran one, and how it was a scam, of course. But I feel like in progressive spaces, it's not going to be talked about, but that doesn't mean that people aren't still secretly judging you just because we're giving lip service to the idea of gluttony means that you are taking food out of someone else's mouth, you know, because you still see people talk about, you know, like, people who go to the food bank and then they're like, well, and then they're, you know, they're buying junk food at the grocery store with their EBT card, and how dare they, because they don't deserve it. And those people oftentimes would consider themselves good, charitable Christians, but they want to dictate what you can eat because you don't deserve it. You didn't earn it like they did.
And to that point, Paul, it was so interesting that I was thinking about this after listening for like several minutes. of thinking about like the trend of church potlucks, how James brought up, and I was like thinking to myself, okay, so like where did that trend go in the evangelical church? Because I, from what I remember of my life, like kind of exiting the church, so to speak, like the organized church at least, then I just noticed a very fast and sharp downward trend of like church potlucks, and whether that is like the classic church ladies making them kind of like started to die off, or if that was a cultural shift, which I think was more that people were seeing that, okay, we're going to like see the gluttony is on the quote unquote list, but we want to like just not talk about it. And it's not going to be a non-issue if we just don't talk about it. And I see that as more of a thing of silent judgment, like you mentioned, Paul, that it may still just be existing in the back of people's minds, but it hasn't ever been like talked about and addressed and sorted through, I guess, from my perspective in the evangelical church. I can't say that at large, but like in my social experiences there.
Well, I also think about sort of your mega churches and like churches that have a large online presence. The people that you see are always basically Hollywood level model actor looking people, you know, the people singing, people playing the music, and the people preaching, you know, they're in, you know, designer clothes. They're in, you know, it's their smoke machines, and they all look like pop stars. And so there is no space to see someone anymore who doesn't look that way. Even within a religion that's supposed to not focus on the outward appearances, you know, God looks at the heart, not the outside. But, you know, if you're going to be on YouTube, then we need to look at the outside.
So back to like the original point, like that silent judgment. I mean, I will be the first to say, but I want to post a question of like, how many of us here have felt like that internal silent judgment of, don't you dare be the first in line, don't you, of anywhere, like that guilt of like, you don't want to look greedy, you don't want to be like the one, like you don't want to be the first one, and you don't want to be the last one, you want to be just somewhere in the middle, like you are waiting for that first person to be like, cool, post is clear, we can now, the gates are open, someone else did it. Because I will be the first to say, like, I don't care how hungry I am, I will not be the first person in that line anywhere. I'm like, nope, unless it is at my house and I did the cooking, in which case I'm like, mama deserved it.
I can identify with that because I used to feel that way too. And since like throwing myself into being a gainer completely, I don't care anymore. I'm like, fuck, I'll be the first one in line. I don't care. I'm hungry. I don't give a shit no more. If I'm hungry, I'm gonna eat. And you're just gonna have to deal with it. And if you think I'm a pig for getting up there first, well, tough shit.
I feel that so much. And like when you said like the first in line, I was like, oh my God. Well, because I was relating that, you know, also just kind of going in reverse back to Paul. Paul, when you were talking about the expectation of image for the more, I guess, quote unquote, like famous church people, if you're going on YouTube, if you're on the church live broadcast or whatever, so many churches have a live broadcast, especially after COVID. I hate to bring up the C word, sorry. But the thing is like, I see that so much, not just in megachurch culture, but pretty much like, you know, across the thing is, you have a media image to uphold, but then a part of that like that was just much more encouraged by is the ever-present thing that's been present for decades of just kind of low-key shaming people for just fatness in general and feeling shame associated with fat, period, whether that is like in control or intentional or not intentional.
Something that dawns on me, and you know, as we step a little bit away from the religion in this aspect, there really is a sense in society of not prioritizing oneself. There is this obligation to humility that I find very interesting because, and I reflect on Bob the Drag Queen's interview on Very Delta, where, you know, because obviously Bob has this joke about being great and fantastic and gorgeous and humble, because that's the joke. But then, you know, they reference it and Bob says, no, bitch, I'm not humble. Why would I be humble? The definition of being humble is to present a false air, is to present a false sense of modesty, like, oh, I'm not so good. And actually, when you think about that, like, that's actually terrible. Like, that we instill this in people to be humble, to be like, no, don't talk about, you know, how great this opportunity is. Don't be your full self. Don't express your full self, right? Something as simple as like what Richie was saying, like, I don't want to be the first person. Like, baby, if you're hungry, like Tim says, I'ma eat. But we do this to ourselves and we say, no. Even though I am hungry, I must present an idea of modesty. I must allow someone else to eat first. Otherwise, I'm a bad person. Why? The whole, you only live for yourself. Like, your body is for you. Like, if we believe in God, God made you. I knew you in the womb. You are so fearfully and wonderfully made. Like, you were fearfully and wonderfully made to be starving because you're hungry, because you need to put food in the body that I made for you, so fucking go eat. And yet we apply this false modesty over the top, which tries to override all this. But it's a wider conversation. You know, Josh, you mentioned COVID. I was saying this to Tim earlier, because I'm feeling a little bit under the weather today. And it's like, back before COVID, I would have soldiered on and gone to work. I would have soldiered on and gone, oh, well, I'm not really sick. I'm not so sick that I'm like laid up in bed, unable to move. That means I'm still good to go to work. And I need to commit to my job and I need to go to work. Even though my body is like, bitch, you unwell. Sit down, you know, be still, the Bible says. Like, Christ. Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of snotty noses, I shall fear no fever. Like, lay down, rest, do the thing. And this is probably one of those ways in which my sense of agnosticism or agnosticism comes in. Like, I'm very much a believer that, like, if you believe in this idea of a something out there guiding you in life, it's like, oh, well, like, what is my destiny? Like, God has a destiny for us. It's like, I don't know, what are you passionate about? What are you naturally skilled at doing? It's probably that. Wouldn't it stand to reason that you're, like, given gifts for a reason, bitch? Like, sometimes we overthink this far too much. But I digress. The whole, we override ourselves. And it's like, actually, maybe the best thing we can do is to prioritize ourselves. Prioritize our health and wellness, which I think also includes when we are hungry and when we are thirsty. We are given provision. We are blessed to live in the societies that we live in, to have access readily to food and beverage. Therefore, when we feel a need to consume, it feels like the correct theological thing to do, to go and consume. Richie, you look.
I feel like it all comes back to this idea of, like, because, you know, we were all raised in different religions, and like they're all beginning to progress in different ways as the years go by. But like, I feel like when we were all kids, the motto was, life is about suffering, so get used to it. And it feels like that just progressed. Like, you know, and once you become an adult, you've got this, like, in the back of your head, like, life is about suffering, just get over it. And like, you can't seem to switch it off.
Because I've done that, because I probably have ADHD. My brain just had a big light bulb moment. And I know this is like so going totally back to religion. But during my time in college, for one of my religion classes, I had to go observe another faith. And I chose Hinduism. And the Hindu temple I went, there was food left and right, offering to the various deities. I mean they had a whole ceremony where they washed, I think it was Ganesh, in milk. I mean, they literally, milk from a cow, like 3 gallons of milk, just glug, 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 glug. So I'm like, you want a religion that, the faith that definitely incorporates food and is all about embracing and like satiate, because if the gods get hungry, to James's point, like if we need to feed the deities, we need to feed ourselves, so that way we can continue to worship those deities, and we need to take care of ourselves now. And then also, let me tell you, the food afterwards, oh my god, some of the best food I ever had in my life. I'm like, I will convert to Hinduism just for this. It was, whew, I was just like, I'm coming back. Granted, I never did, but it was a really profound experience, because I'm like, I never at that point, and since then, have never experienced something so involved using, like, to feed the gods, to feed the deities, to take care of them. And that goes to James's point of, we need to take care of ourselves, we need to consume. So
I do want to jump in real quick and just put it out there. If you read a lot of Abrahamic scripture, a lot of the traditional sacrifice to Yahweh was food. And the reason for that is because, and especially in such a time as being nomadic and, you know, potentially pre-major agriculture, food was scarce and hard to come by. So it really meant something to sacrifice that and say, I'm going to give this up for something else, right? So going all the way back, there is a very strong tie to the concept of food and the access to the provisions of life.
You had something about, you know, gifts that we're giving from a creator, whatever. And I consider one of my spiritual gifts is hospitality, which includes feeding people. Like I'm the one that bakes things for after Sunday morning service. I'm the one that baked 15 pumpkin pies to sell for the bake sale. But I'm also the one who will not be the first in line to eat the things that I baked. And I do think that comes because, you know, in Christianity, shame is sort of baked in to the, you know, the religion itself, which it shouldn't be. And that's something that I'm unlearning, but, you know, you don't want to be seen as the person who's overeating, even though clearly, if you look at me, I've probably overeaten a time or two in my life. You know, I'm not, no one's missing that, but, you know, you also, you don't want to be that fat guy who, you know, is indulging too much, which is something that I'm still in the process of unlearning.
Oh, I'm coming over to your house. Something that came to mind as Richie were talking about, and also just James, it was like a brain blast moment of like, holy shit, there's a whole entire thing in many world religions, and I don't know if it was as prevalent in others as mine, but many folk, oh, I guess it definitely isn't that because of Lent and like fasting. Fasting is like, as a reverse, such a integral part of like a faith experience. When you talk about knowing the agriculture of the time, the no preservatives of the time, of like, you know, the ancients that were living this and like giving those sacrifices, there was Africa sacrificing it because they had to give something up. Similarly to how many religions focus in on specifically like food fasts or media fasts, or like, you know, it's evolved into a million different things, but specifically many people think about food when they think about a fast, and specifically in Lent, you're thinking about giving something up for a spiritual focus. And to me, I don't know, like, I've personally like participated in those in my past, but quite honestly, I guess maybe it's just in my personal experience. This is just like an opinion, it's pure opinion, but like in my personal opinion, that has not brought about any other new focus to like my religious experience. It just made me feel like shit, and I would have so rather like gone over to Paul's house and had a great like banana bread or something as a spiritual experience. Thank God.
Thank you so much for pointing that out, Josh. I have fasted before, and the only focus it gave me was the focus on this fucking church, this fucking bastard, fucking bullshit. I'm so fucking angry all the fucking time. Like, just turning, like, you see the movie Gremlins? Like, that's what happens when you don't feed this after midnight, right? Like, it.
Oh, I know. I know. And I've been on a fast myself. I went on one of those 3-day juice cleanses, and I was ready to murder someone by the end of day two.
Oh, my word, no. Mm-mm.
Did anyone in this group ever do a Daniel fast?
No. A Daniel fast? What, you mean like the dude with the lion, like sitting in there just like chilling?
Precisely. But it was like a thing that was, it was a trend. I feel like it was a trend in my upbringing that like teenagers and adults alike would do a Daniel fast of only eating fruits and vegetables. So it was like cutting out meats, cutting out anything that was processed, no added sugars, no, like there was like all this stuff, but it was basically just a vegetable-based diet that wasn't like vegetarian exclusively. Does that make sense?
And then keto was born. Like, do you know what? A lot of these diets, they all fucking, they do swings and roundabouts. If, by the way, just a quick plug, you'll need to be listening to, oh, why am I forgetting the name of it? Maintenance Phase. That's it. I don't know why I couldn't remember the name of it. Maintenance Phase podcast. They lambast diets and the history of this shit all the live long day. Strong recommendation, y'all. My God. But I want to put this out there to y'all, because obviously leading up to this, you've probably had some thoughts percolating around, you know, fatness and religion and stuff. What's an aspect of this conversation we haven't touched on yet that you want to talk about?
Humans, way back in the day, valued a voluptuous Venus de Milo right there. The OG obesity. She has big fat tits. She has a big fat belly. And humans valued that. Granted, probably because, food was a hot commodity in order to survive. But the fact that they were like, this is our ideal, if we can do this, we've made it. That is something I've always just have admired. That I'm just like, you know what? I like what these people were thinking back, because that's like the OG religion. I don't even know if archaeologists and historians know what religion that was, but whatever it was, they valued it. So I can only imagine what it was like when it was an extant thing instead of an extinct faith. Oh, Josh, yes.
Well, I don't know if this is this is probably totally nerdtastic, but maybe some other people can relate with me. But as a young teen, when I was first, searching whatever we all searched when we first discovered our attraction to fatness, and also our affinity to become that ourselves. But I went through such a very long lasting rabbit hole phase of going through the Greek and Roman deities that were like Dionysus and things like that. And looking up hundreds of pictures of Dionysus and how he was depicted in their iconography, as well as then that led me on another rabbit hole to other world religions that have fat gods and fat deities. And that was usually a sign of plenty or parties or hospitality or all these things that are community based or plenty based, the iconography of wheat and the scythe in American culture, 300 years ago. Mm-hmm. A lot of those things are very much tied together. And it was just very interesting that that was a part of my fat awakening, so to speak.
I love to hear that. I mean, we've had people on this podcast who basically say they're representing Bacchus in human form with that indulgence, to just drink champagne directly from the bottle and just live, which I think is fabulous if you can afford to do that in this economy, girl. But I think there is such a beauty in that indulgence. Again, I come back to this idea of if God is real, we are made to experience the world around us. The tongue is dedicated purely to what goes in the mouth and into the body for ingestion. It is purely based on what can be perceived that way. You can plate food to look nice. If it's crunchy, it sounds nice. It can smell nice. And yes, smell and taste work together. But taste is purely for food. It is one of our five senses, one of the five ways in which we engage with the world. And it just does not seem right to me that the appropriate way to engage with taste would be to have some form of resistance against it. That doesn't sound reasonable to the bodies that we have. I mean, Paul, I'm curious to ask you, because for all of us otherwise here, we are driven by a specific narrative within gaining. You yourself are not a gainer, but you experience obviously thick, juicy gorgeousness in general in your everyday. For us, obviously, there's a sense of, well, we like this, therefore we pursue it. There's a specific narrative that draws us to it. But for yourself, how does that shake out?
Well, I like to say that I got this body by pizza and by accident. And for me, food and my size for a lot of time is wrapped up in shame, in the idea that yes, I want to eat that, but no, I shouldn't. Growing up evangelical probably contributed to that, because shame is just the name of the game. And so no matter what you enjoy, you're supposed to be ashamed of it because it's not Jesus. But now, I am looking for two things when it comes to food, and that is that it tastes good and it nourishes my body. And not, well, how many calories are in it? Well, what is it going to look like if I buy this at the grocery store? And that is, something that I'm unlearning. But I feel like even though, like, I wouldn't say it's part of my spiritual practice, but the fact that, like, feeding people and enjoying the fruits of what it is that I'm making is tied up in my church going life. In fact, also in my job, like when we have meetings and stuff, I'm the one that buys all the food for it, and I'm the one that bakes things because I'd rather bake it myself than pay for it. So it becomes, it's part of my cultural identity and my religious identity that I'm the one that brings the, you know, the cupcakes.
Something that kind of makes me think of, and, you know, maybe this sounds a bit silly, but this is something I've often dwelled on, especially since pursuing my own gaining journey, is that the narratives we pursue are a form of faith, right? Because ultimately, what is faith? What is it but a series of actions and repetitions that we make happen to sort of signify, this is what I value, this is what I'm giving my time and attention to. And I wonder if, you know, this almost reflects a very secular approach to food, this idea that there can be a food-driven sense of faith, which is centered around community. All of our historical narratives around food are about sharing and community. Some of my favorite church memories are about the church camps we would go on, and there would always be the roster, who's on the kitchen what night, who, and if you're not cooking, you're serving, and if you're not serving, you're cleaning, and everyone takes part in the meal. And yes, there's buffet style and all this goes on, but like, you always contribute, and it's quite beautiful to see people bringing their own flavors to that. Some of the greatest social fantasies I have for gaining is, you know, I want to buy up all 10 houses in a cul-de-sac and have all my gainer friends live in them. And then every now and again, I want to just wheel out the dining table and say, we're having a block party tonight, and just everybody's coming out with tables and tablecloths and bench style seating for the big boys. And everyone is just laying down tureens and casserole dishes and plates and just everything. And it's like, the fantasy is not just, oh, let's all be big fat piggies, oink oink, and eat all the food. That could be an element. But also, it's the community. It's the sense that, hey, I haven't seen you in so long. I love the look of this, like, red bean casserole you brought. Let's have a plate. Let's go for a wander about. You know, let's go hang by that tree over there. You know, let's go do this. Let's sit with these people and sit around. And, oh, you know, the desserts are up the other end. And, oh, so-and-so's up the other end. Let's go and chat to them for a little bit. And, you know, like, those are the things that really entice me. When it comes to food and community, it's invoking a sense of all of that. And I think from what everyone has kind of shared today, that also seems to be a big proponent of what we come back to with our sense of faith. It is the people. I mean, even in a secular sense, we see this with jobs all the time. You could be in a shit job, but you save for the good people that you work with, right? Like, it always comes back to people. So I think there really is a beautiful element in which, and Paul, like you were saying, that there could be some historical, not great feelings with regards to shame and regards to food, that communion and community with people who come to the table with love and grace and freedom of that shame means that it could present you the ultimate opportunity to really start to shed those things, right? And I think that's same so for a lot of us with what we experience with food culture and any particular hangups we have, especially as gainers, when it comes to, am I gaining fast enough, or am I eating the right foods? And, you know, people are always kind of coming at me sideways about, like, what I'm eating and how I'm eating it and when, you know, it's a lot.
So I was even thinking, as you were talking and just listening to Paul mention community and, like, social things like that, there's such a stark difference for me that in my Bible college journey, I realized, I think towards the end of my Bible college journey, that there is a very big difference between, like, the doctrine, the written, like, part of the faith, and the actual, like, carrying out of it, or the tradition. There's a very big difference between traditions that are, like, socially bound or socially encouraged, and then the actual doctrine of the faith. And what we choose to actually, like, pay more attention to and give more weight to, so to speak. But when I think about, like, these sort of issues that we brought up, then that definitely has now, at least from my perspective, transferred into, this is a tradition talk, because now societally, then, like, we're starting to confront a lot more body positivity things, and the church doesn't want to look like an asshole, you know, just kind of at large, being like, well, all of pop culture and Lizzo is on this, you know, body positive kick, and we don't want to be against that, because a lot of young people that are going to now populate churches, maybe, are going to believe in these sort of things, and the traditions are changing, and the traditions will continue to change, but hopefully traditions like your amazing dream of like community like that, James, it's insane. That'd be so cool. But I would only hope that like our traditions more err on the side, whether we are religious or not, to include people and to celebrate people and to, you know, help that food be the center of that, like it always has been.
One of the things that on my faith journey, because growing up evangelical and now being way more progressive than even my own church, the thing that keeps me coming back is two things: community and communal singing. And the community is the also the going to dinner afterwards or having food there or whatever, is a huge part of community.
I love that, though. It always comes back to food and people and things that we do together. Again, that conversation around, like, as gainers and also as non-gainers, people who are of size, like, food can be a part of that, and it can be a part of it in a such a wonderful social way that can invite friendship, conversation, and, like, maybe this is a bit lame to reference, but, like, Princess and the Frog. Like, the dad had the right message. It's like, food brings together people from all walks of life. You know, like, I know when you live in an apartment building or whatever, like, you get that blend of smells, like, everyone's cooking different things, and you're a bit like, I don't know. But, like, sometimes, like, one dish in particular, like, just sings, and it stands out among the rest, and you go, bitch, I want an invite to that table. I want to sample what's going on in that household. And I love that. Richie, you look like you want to say something.
Yeah. I mean, I do live in an apartment complex. And the hallways usually smell of curry, because we have a lot of international students here, and garlic. And let me tell you, I will, I'm like, just open up your door and I will come over. But also, I think for all of us, at least for me, but from what I've gathered, to that community aspect, like, preparing food or being with food and people and just embracing and celebrating, it's about love. Like, to Paul's point, like, that's how he expresses, like, hospitality. And I would even dare I say, like, that's how he expresses love to his congregation. He's just like, I'm gonna eat the food because that's how I express love, and I'm also getting hungry, but, like, I will eat, like, as a compliment, like we always say, like, oh, this is so good. Thank you for making that. So expressing gratitude. And for me, like, I'm always the person that will get my pots and pans out. If I know someone is coming over, I'm like, child, you will be fed. Because having moved from the north to kind of the south, I've really owned that of myself, like saying, I will make you something. You just come over, bring yourself and an appetite. Even if you ain't hungry, bring an appetite. I don't care if it's a PB&J stamp. I will make you something, or I will offer you something. Because that's how I express love, is you're not leaving without a full belly.
I want to ask here, just as we begin to come to the end of the episode, are there any final thoughts that anyone wants to share about, you know, maybe things we've discussed today or things that have gone unsaid so far in the conversation?
I just had another, like, very loosely related thought, and it's not really even, like, advancing the food part of this conversation, but I just, like, drew another connection to something we talked about a while ago about humility and false humility and things like that. And it seems to me almost that, like, what many people were trying to, probably well-intentioned people were trying to get at with humility talks was just getting at the fact that you need to, like, not think so much of yourself that you forget to thank somebody for doing something really nice for you, or to not forget to think of someone else as well when you're thinking about building community and, you know, think all that kind of stuff. So it was like that got me thinking of, oh my gosh, like, thinking of someone else to feed them, or thinking that, like, that is not humility, that is just, like, gratitude, that is being empathetic and open-minded. And yay food.
It's the golden rule, do unto others as you would do to yourself. So
I guess I do kind of have one final thought that's been percolating. Just that no matter what your religion, you know, the rule books were written by people from 100 different places and 100 different times, and they're going to be inconsistent. And in order to deal with those inconsistencies, why not choose the most loving version of those? And so the most loving version is to love your neighbor, and that means make sure that they're fed. Don't forget that, but it's also love your neighbor as yourself. So don't forget that you have to feed yourself too. And so, like, yeah, maybe the Bible mentions gluttony a couple of times, and there's a dispute over whether what that actually means. Choose the most loving version of it instead of trying to go for the most hard-assed version.
Always give yourself grace. You're hungry, eat till you're full. We have stomachs that tell us that for a reason. Just take care of yourself, and everything will fall into place. You know what? If taking care of yourself means an extra 300 whatever pounds, it's fine. There will always be people there, no matter what, for you.
If there's one final thing I want to say here, and it's actually a scripture that, not to be all that about it, but kind of came to my mind in talking about this, and Paul, you kind of touched on this a little bit. It's in Matthew, and Jesus basically says, "For whatever you do, do unto the least of these is what you do to me." And I think that's probably the best example of how all this comes together. Like, Josh, you were saying, like, you know, try to consider other people when it comes to gratitude. And I think the best example that we can really come to is, let's think about the people who probably need this the most. So when it comes to social circumstances, don't just reach out to the people who you think are the most popular or the people who are the most attractive to you. Maybe consider reaching out to the people who maybe you wouldn't think to normally talk to. If you're at a social situation, same thing. Don't just go for the people who you think, oh, these are the popular kids. Maybe think about, hey, that person's on their own. Maybe I can go and build a friendship with that person. And just maybe looking at some different ways that we can try to not just have some people, but bring all people into the conversation, whether it's about faith or about other things. And food is such a wonderful vehicle to bridge all of those gaps. But this has been such a wonderful episode, I think, really. I feel very light, ironically, at listening to all of this. So I'm going to go stuff my face after this and get nice and heavy again. But this is fabulous. Thank you, everyone, so much for being here today. Now, where can our listeners find each of you online?
Well, thanks. Y'all can find me on thegrom.com and Instagram is Moan Appetit, MOANAPPEtit. There we go.
You can find me mostly on Instagram and TikTok at Zaftig Spice. That's ZAFTIG Spice. Zaftig is a Yiddish word that means juicy and voluptuous, and spice like the Spice Girls.
Okay, yeah, Spice Girls. Hi, I'm Josh again, and you can find me on Grammar as Why Hello Harry. Harry as in like hair on your head, not Harry Potter, but that's the reference. Gainsta is hungry.hungryhimbo. Look forward to seeing you guys. Friend me. Let's talk.
Fantastic. Well, that's it for another week here on Thick Radio. Please remember to like and subscribe, rate us 5 stars, and leave us a good review. Now, if you liked this episode, the podcast, or just us in general, share it with your friends and encourage them to tune in. You can find me on Instagram and Blue Sky at Stanham.
And you can find me on Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and TikTok at Thicky Mouse. You can also look us up on Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok at Thick Radio, or at our website at podpage.com/thickradio. If you want to submit a voice note or become a financial supporter of the show, you can find the links in the show notes, and you can also write to us at thethickradio@gmail.com. So until next time, bye fats.
Bye fats.
Oh yeah, bye fats.
Let's talk about it.
Radio is a Patreon and Anchor app podcast produced by Stan and Vicky Mouse.
Mixed and mastered by Stan.
Our artwork is provided by Luke Pizzu.
Our theme song is provided by Bonnie by Cream.